Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Altec's first quarter 2015 earnings conference. With us this morning from Altec, we have Jose Valdez, CEO, Eduardo Escalante, CFO, and Hernan Lozano, Head of Investor Relations, who will discuss the company's performance and answer any questions that you may have. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and will be available on the company's website, www.altec.com. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Mr. Lozano. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome. We very much appreciate everyone's participation today. As always, this call will be divided into two parts. First, Mr. Valdez, our CEO, will provide some industry insights and comments on our operations. Then, Mr. Escalante, our CFO, we'll discuss Altec's first quarter financial highlights and provide a brief update on strategic projects. Afterwards, we will open up for a Q&A session. Before we get started, let me remind you that information discussed on today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements. Altec undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Jose Valdez.
Thank you, Hernan. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. First quarter operational results were significantly better than we expected, supported by a more normalized pricing environment. Oil and feedstock prices started to recover after extending their decline through January. Reference Brent crude oil prices went up 14% from a $49 per barrel average in January to $56 in March. As you may recall, our 2015 guidance was based on a $56 per barrel average Brent, but monthly prices were expected to remain below this level throughout the first half of the year. It was encouraging to see this improvement in the pricing environment reflected in consolidated volume and EBITDA, both of which grew on an annual and quarterly basis. However, there was a marked difference in performance at each of our two business segments. Polyester had a solid quarter, supported by stable demand, a lower inventory devaluation charge, and the first quarterly profit from our Coso Lecaque cogeneration facility. On the other hand, our plastics and chemical segment posted extraordinary operating results, boosted by better-than-expected polypropylene and expandable polystyrene margins. Polypropylene had a particularly strong beginning of the year as margins were complemented with volume resulting from robust demand and incremental feedstock supply. I'm pleased to inform you that our plastic and chemicals portfolio was also successfully reorganized as planned, with the expandable polystyrene operations acquired from BASF and the sale of our polyurethane business. As of April 1st, our new and wholly owned subsidiary, Styropek, operates approximately 230,000 tons per year of combined EPS capacity in Mexico, Brazil, Argentina, and Chile, representing roughly 40% of installed capacity in the Americas. We are very excited by the prospects of this business as we build upon our operating and commercial EPS platform in the region. In addition to the improving price environment and favorable first quarter operating results, there have been recent industry developments that are worth noting as we look ahead. First and foremost, a $66 per ton increase to the North American PTA price formula came into effect as of April 1, 2015. This adjustment will allow us to offset some of the oil-driven margin contraction that was expected this year. However, the benefit in 2015 is capped by the applicable 9-month time period, in addition we will not be able to pass through the entire increase in some of our PET contracts that are not directly linked to the PTA price formula. This situation should resolve into next year. Second, petitions for anti-dumping and countervailing duties on packaging-grade PET resin were filed in March with the U.S. Department of Commerce and the U.S. International Trade Commission. Yesterday, the U.S. International Trade Commission made a unanimous preliminary determination that unfairly traded imports of PET resin from Canada, China, India, and Oman are causing injury to U.S. producers. As a result, the U.S. Department of Commerce will continue to conduct its investigations on imports of these products. Preliminary countervailing duty determinations are expected in June, and preliminary anti-dumping duty determinations in August. The entire investigation process is expected to take approximately 1 year. There have also been significant developments abroad, such as the two major unplanned shutdowns recently announced in China. The first one was caused by a large fire at a 1.6 million ton per year paraxylene facility that is integrated with a 4.5 million ton per year on-site PTA plant. The second shutdown is potentially more relevant for the industry long-term outlook, as it involves the bankruptcy of a large PTA producer operating a total capacity of 3.2 million tons per year. Reference Asian polyester margins were relatively stable during the first quarter, but below of our original estimates. Nevertheless, events such as this support our view that Asian margins should improve gradually in the remainder of the year, easing pressure on global polyester markets. In conclusion, 2015 was off to a good start under a challenging low oil price environment. We're fully committed to build upon this as industry dynamics are moving in the right direction to help us overcome the headwinds that we have anticipated for this year. I would now like to turn the call over to Eduardo to discuss our financial results and provide a brief overview on strategic investment.
Thank you, Pepe, and good morning, everyone. Alpek's first quarter financial results reflect lower feedstock prices and a one-time profit associated with the sale of our polyurethane business. Besides their impact on this quarter's consolidated revenues, which were down 16% year-on-year, lower feedstock prices resulted in a $20 million non-cash inventory devaluation charge that affected EBITDA. Similar to the recovery in oil, feedstock prices posted sequential improvement between January and March, and they were still lower than year-end 2014. Another non-operating item included in EBITDA is the $26 million profit associated with the sale of our polyurethane business. As a result, consolidated EBITDA for the quarter was $137 million. I would like to walk you through a quick calculation to isolate these two non-operating items and evaluate the underlying results. The first step is to exclude the $26 million profit, such that first quarter EBITDA totals $111 million, up 5% and 55% when compared to the first and fourth quarter of 2014, respectively. However, this EBITDA figure still includes the $20 million impact from non-cash inventory devaluation charges. By adding back these charges to the first quarter and the corresponding amounts to each of the previous quarters, we obtain a comparable consolidated EBITDA. Alpek's first quarter 2015 comparable consolidated EBITDA was $131 million, compared to $127 million in first quarter 2014 and $123 million in fourth quarter 2014. Excluding inventory charges and the one-time profit, First quarter EBITDA was 3% higher year on year and 7% sequentially. We believe this indicator should also be taken into consideration, especially at times when inventory valuation charges or gains or other extraordinary items have a significant impact on EBITDA. Breaking down results by business segment, polyester volume was down 1% quarter on quarter, but up 1% year on year as the impact from a customer's multi-month planned shutdown was offset by resilient demand. First quarter polyester EBITDA was $60 million, including a $14 million non-cash inventory devaluation charge and a $3 million profit from the ramp-up of our Cosoleacaque cogeneration plant. Plastics and chemicals reported higher volume and EBITDA, both annually and sequentially, excluding the $26 million profit. Volume growth was driven mainly by polypropylene, while EBITDA reflects a strong polypropylene and EPS pricing amid falling feedstocks costs. Also included in plastics and chemicals first quarter EBITDA is a $6 million inventory devaluation charge. Moving down the P&L, we reported majority net income of $25 million during the first quarter, compared to a $29 million loss in the fourth quarter and $24 million gain a year ago. Growth in operating income supported this quarter's bottom line. Now, let me move on to our cash flow and balance sheet. CapEx during the quarter was $69 million, up 57% year-on-year. Almost 80% of these funds were used for strategic projects, including the EPS operations acquired from the ASF and a second payment associated with the Huntsman MEG tolling agreement. First quarter net debt was $774 million, up $59 million from year-end 2014. The increase reflects the ongoing investment in strategic projects and $27 million in dividends from our joint venture companies. This was in preparation for Alpek's $95 million cash dividend that is being paid today, as approved at our shareholders' meeting. Gross debt was flat year-to-date, and the company's leverage and interest coverage ratios stand at 1.7 and 7.1 times, respectively. Regarding our key investment projects, let me provide a brief update. The Corpus Christi PTA PET plant is advancing as planned. No payments were required this quarter. The Altamira cogeneration facility is in its final contractor selection stage. Construction is expected to begin later this year. The Huntsman MEG tolling agreement is also progressing as planned. As mentioned earlier, a second payment was made in the first quarter as per the agreed schedule. Lastly, we continue to engage Pemex regarding our MEG integration project in Mexico. However, we have no developments to report since our February conference call. I would like to wrap up this section of the call with a brief comment on Alpek's 2015 guidance. Our $500 million full-year EBITDA guidance remains unchanged, despite the lower-than-expected one-time profit and the sale from the sale of our polyurethane business. The difference in profit versus our initial $75 million estimate was due to the final structure of the deal, and its appropriate accounting recognition. Rather than being an outright asset sale, there was also a tolling type arrangement involved. The transaction continues to be evaluated in order to determine whether additional profit should be recognized this year. Whatever the final outcome may be regarding profit recognition, it is important to note that this will have no impact in cash flow or in the underlying economics of the deal for Alpek. We believe that the favorable first quarter results, combined with the potential benefit from recent industry developments, will offset the profit difference. In other words, improvement in the recurring portion of this year's estimated EBITDA is expected to compensate the lower one-time profit recognized from the sale of our polyurethane business. This concludes my remarks, and now I would like to open the call for questions. Operator, please instruct the participants on how to place their questions.
Thank you, sir. To the audience today, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. Just a reminder, if you're joining us by speakerphone today, make sure your mute function is turned off to allow the signal to reach our equipment. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, star 1 for your questions. And we'll pause for just a moment. And we'll go first to Lillian Stark at Morgan Stanley.
Hi, good morning, and congratulations on the results and on the positive news announced on the press release. I have a quick question first on the minorities that you reported, around $23 million in minorities. What is that related to? We were thinking that with the sale of the assets to Bath, minorities would have come down. So if you could provide us with a bit of color there. And I guess that would be simply the only question I have.
Thank you, Lillian, for your question. Yeah, the minority for the quarter was $23 million. It does reflect the profit, the gain from the sale of the polyurethane business. Something that you have to take into account when you look at the controlling and non-controlling interest in the net income is how the valuation, the inventory devaluation charges are affecting us. Most of the devaluation charges are in companies that are included in the controlling interest portion. So when you make comparisons quarter to quarter, you have to consider most of the devaluation charges that we have on the polyester side.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Got it.
We'll go next to Gustavo Gattas at ETG.
Hi, guys. I had a couple of questions, but I just wanted to start up with follow-up to Lillian's question. I'm not sure I understood, but I got the impression that you mentioned that part of the reason why this figure was so large had been because of the recognition of the gain. Even though we understood that the gain was basically a recognition of asset value at the controlling ownership company, which in my mind would lead to no gain whatsoever for the minority stake. So I just wanted to clarify that point. And if possible, is it at all possible for you guys to give us a guidance of where you expect minority interest to be for the future? Is it something that could really be as high as 40-45% of your recurring profit as it was in this quarter or not? The second question that I had just had to do with the Asian shutdowns and basically the message you're giving for guidance. I was just wondering if you could give us an idea of just how relevant the size of what's out there is for the market, and whether or not you actually think that that's going to bring about a relevant change in your ability to price exports to Europe. And just as a follow-up on that little thing, sorry for asking too much too long, but if I understand it correctly, the signal you guys are giving on the guidance is if you had booked $75 million, your guidance could very well now be at $550 million for the year. And I was just wondering, is that something that you guys are seeing mostly in the polyester side as far as the improvement goes, or is it both of the businesses? Thank you.
Okay, let me thank you Gustavo for your questions. Let me start addressing the extraordinary gain that we have from the sale of the polyurethane business, and then Pepe will talk about the Asia shutdown of PTA plants. Regarding the profit, Polyoles, the joint venture company that we have with BASF, sold the polyurethane business, so now it's going to be owned 100% this business by BASF. We recognize from that sale an extraordinary gain of $26 million. Okay, that is included in this quarter. Previously, we had estimated that we were going to recognize $75 million. Today, the rest from $26 million up to $75 is still being analyzed to define how much is going to be recognized this year. Okay? So we haven't ruled out to increase the profit from $26 million. And we'll let you know in the next few months how this evolves. Now, these $26 million are in the non-controlling interest. Part of it is in the non-controlling interest net income of the company. I think what is creating a little bit of confusion more than just the recognition of this gain is the issue that the inventory devaluation is partially included in the controlling interest and partially in the non-controlling interest. And let me try to walk you through that. If you look at the first quarter 2015, of the $20 million that we recognize as inventory devaluation, $14 million are included in the net income controlling interest companies, and six are included in the non-controlling portion of it. But when you look at, for example, at the last quarter of 2014, we had an inventory devaluation charge of $52 million, and all of it was included in the controlling interest part of the net income. So you see we have a significant difference, $39 million going from 52, from the 52 charge last quarter, fourth quarter of last year, to $14 million this year, versus only $6 million in terms of the difference in inventory devaluation charges in the non-controlling portion of the net income. So I will now turn it to Pepe to talk a little bit about the impact of the shutdown in Asia.
Okay, what we were mentioning was two shutdown opportunities in Asia. The first one seems to be of a more temporary nature, the one related to the paraxylene explosion. That will probably have, I would guess, 6 months sort of impact, and that involves 4.5 million tons of PTA, which are integrated with the PX plant that exploded. So that will have a relatively short-term impact. The short-term impact will be in a little bit higher paraxylene prices on the one hand, and certainly, hopefully, a little bit higher margins of PTA. On the second hand, the 3.2 million shutdown of PTA is a result of the bankruptcy of the company, of the other company. That should be of a more permanent nature. But even more important than that, I mean, even considering those two shutdowns, the 4.5 and the 3.2, which total close to 8 million tons of PTA, you know, the situation is that we still have, we have an excess of 15 million tons in Asia. So if you subtract 7 or 8, you still have excess capacity in Asia. So it doesn't really solve the problem, except for the fact that what we know is happening is that the 3.2 million tons that went bankrupt was a relatively modern facility, relatively competitive cost. So what we see happening is that the fact that a lot of the other PTA plants are having a hard time as well. We even have been analyzing numbers, and we have concluded that the majority of the PTA plants in China, including the large facilities, are losing money on a variable cost basis. So again, that indicates to us that, you know, sooner or later there has to be some sort of consolidation or some sort of change in the industry so that they can at least recover the cash costs. These plants, I don't think, can continue losing money on a cash basis forever. So again, we see this as perhaps the first step in a consolidation process that should improve the margins of PTA in China. Also, it's important to note that 2015 is the year with the highest overcapacity of PTA and the lowest utilization. The utilization rate of PTA in China this year is going to be around 70%, and it should be improving at close to 5% per year over the next 3 years. So based on that, we do believe that that margins going forward should improve. Difficult to be more specific in terms of how much, but they should be improving. The last the margin over the last weeks have been in the range of $90 to $100 per ton, and before this event happened, they were more in the $60 per ton. So again, we are expecting to see an improvement in the margins, in the coming months. Now, with relationship to improvements for 2015 for our polyester and plastic business, I would say the following. You know, part of the results, we did not mention this to a great detail, but part of the improvements that we have seen in this first quarter, we have had record low cash cost, operating cash cost in both segments, both in polyester as well as in plastics and chemicals. We have had had record, as I say, low cost for the PTA plants, particularly in our Mexican operations. And also, we had record volume, domestic volume sold by our plastic division, particularly the polypropylene side. So there are other improvements in the business apart from these, let's say, disruptions of our competitors in Asia. And those, I think, should be of a more permanent nature. In the case of polypropylene, not only we see an increase in domestic volume, we also see an increase in margin in North America as a result of tighter capacity utilization or higher capacity utilization of polypropylene in the U.S. versus the rest of the world. And we expect that to continue. So again, we do believe that not only in terms of the margins, we will see improvements also in cost and in volumes throughout the year.
Perfect. Thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
We'll go next to Diego Mendez at Itaú BBA.
Yes, guys, good morning. So I have two questions as well. Coming back to the EBITDA guidance, if you could provide us more details on how do you expect it to evolve towards the next quarter. It delivered a pretty strong recurring number in the first quarter. And depending on how you look, and also you are mentioning that the prospects are for improvements going forward. So the question is if the $500 million does not seem conservative. And also, you mentioned like the timing for the countervailing and antitrust duties for the packing PET in the U.S. But could you please tell us what you expect in terms of duties and how this could change the profitability in the North American market? Thank you.
Let me answer your second question first. In terms of the potential impact of the countervailing duties, anti-dumping in the U.S., look, the volume that is under discussion is a very significant volume. These four countries that we mentioned supply 350,000 tons per year into the U.S. 350,000 tons per year of PET is close to 10% of the market. So it's a very significant impact in terms of volume. If the anti-dumping, if this process is successful, as we expect it will be, the main benefit for us is going to be a volume increase. We do not expect any significant change in margins, but we do expect a significant increase in volume, and that could be very significant for us. Considering we have 35 to 40% of the market in the U.S., 350 times 35 would be a little bit more than 100,000 tons. And that would be, again, obviously, close to 10% of our volume in the U.S. market of increase in PET. And remember, since we have integration back to PTA, the additional margins of those tons, you know, I don't know, I could tell you it could be $100 to $200 additional margin. So you're talking of, important development. That's the most important part. Again, it's a higher volume. On the other hand, as I mentioned, you know, the polypropylene margins are also very, very strong because of higher capacity utilization. And so we expect that to remain, and the bigger question is, it is still related to what's going to happen with crude oil prices, because of if we could have a sustained improvement in crude oil prices, that could also play a significant role during the remainder of the year in terms of increasing our margins.
Tell you a little bit, Diego, about how we see our guidance for the year. When you look at the first quarter results and you remove the $26 million extraordinary profit from the sale of the polyurethane business, the EBITDA would have been $111 million. Okay. In the guidance, in the $500 million guidance that we provided for 2015, we were considering $75 million of extraordinary gain from the sale of that business. As of today, we have a gap versus the $26 million. We still don't know, as we mentioned before, we still don't know how much additional to the $26 million we are going to be able to recognize during this year. So considering that we have a very good operating results in the first quarter, we think that for the time being, the best approach is to maintain the $500 million guidance of EBITDA for the year. And see how the situation evolves regarding both fronts, the operating results as well as the extraordinary gains from the sale of the polyurethane business. So let's wait a few months and see how what happens. For the time being, we will maintain the $500 million guidance for the year.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And just a reminder to the audience, it is star one if you'd like to ask a question. And we'll go next to Philippe Santos at J.P. Morgan.
Yeah, General, good morning. You mentioned that there's a difference on the EBITDA guidance, but how is your view now for the volumes guidance? You're still working with the about 5 million tons. How will it be seen, especially considering that you have some capacity shutdowns in Asia and the global market has changed a bit since we spoke last time. So how do you see in terms of the demand volumes and the expectation for this year? Thank you.
Well, as we explained, we certainly believe we are going to beat our volume guidance. We're going to be hopefully higher. Main reasons being, again, polypropylene volumes, particularly in Mexico, that as the market is tighter, imports from the U.S. are coming down a little bit. So we had, I mentioned before, we had our first quarter was record volume for Indelpro, and we beat our forecast or our budget by a significant amount in the case of polypropylene. That's one of the important, let's say, improvements versus the guidance. And we see this continuing for the remainder of the year, the volume. The margins might be a little bit under more pressure, but volume we see continue strong. And the bigger unknown at this stage, Felipe, is with respect to the volume of polyester, particularly in North America, particularly in the U.S. We don't. It's very difficult now to quantify to what extent are we going to be able to capitalize on this dumping situation. In theory, once this process gets started. I believe that perhaps starting in June or July, I mean, you might have some sort of provisional dumping fees, and that means that if the case, when this is concluded, you know, by end of this year, beginning of next year, they find the definitive definitive dumping, all of the customers that import from this date onward, from June, July onward, they will have to pay those duties. And again, to what extent this situation is going to help us increase volume right away is still a little bit unknown. But I do believe we are going to be able to also exceed our budgeted volume for polyester as well.
Okay. Thanks so much.
We'll go next to Pedro Medeiros at Citi.
Thank you. Good morning, guys. Congratulations for the results. I most of my questions were answered. I have a very objective question on the chemicals business. When we look at this quarter sales volumes, it was a record quarter, at least for the history of the last 3 or 4 years. Can you talk about what drove the higher sales volumes for the first quarter and whether that can further expand in the short term or if that type of sales volume level is sustainable or not? I have a second question as well. Given the continued weakness of the PTA business, globally speaking, it's been weak for about 2 years now, with very volatile margins over the past two quarters in light of the oil price volatility. Do you mind to talk a bit about whether Alpek would see any opportunity on the M&A market for PTA for 2015 as a result of asset prices and potential asset shutdowns in Asia, as we were just talking about?
Well, the, the first question I think I already answered. We do see the polypropylene volume continuing for the remainder of the year. This first quarter was very successful, first because the market is there, second because we have availability of propylene. We believe that this strong demand will continue in the over in the next months. Okay? The market is strong. Remember, I mean, one of the advantages of crude oil prices coming down that we did not mention at the beginning of the year, I mean, we lose margin, and we explain why that happens, but there's no question as the prices of propylene are coming down in the U.S., we're going to gain volume. We're going to gain volume. I mean, the polypropylene resin will grow faster, and also, you know, we will have less imports and potentially more exports of polypropylene outside of the U.S. as we become more competitive in the propylene prices. So we do see, you know, that business going forward with higher volume. And remember also, the other aspect that is important is the first quarter we were still, the EPS acquisition will start in April. So with this acquisition, we will also increase our volume. We will have additional volume for EPS in the next months. We will lose, obviously, the polyurethane volume, but the EPS volume that we are going to gain is higher than the polyurethane volume that we're going to lose. So we're going to increase the volume, or we're going to maintain very strong volumes in the plastic and chemicals, because we believe polypropylene will remain, and we're going to increase a little bit with the EPS acquisition. In terms of M&A opportunities, look, we are always looking for we're very active. I mean, it might not look like that, but we're very active in that market. We're always looking at one or two different projects. The key question for us is not really that you can buy assets on the cheap. We want to buy assets that we believe are going to be cost competitive going forward. We assume that the PTA margins and the PET margins are going to remain very competitive, and we want to buy assets that can compete with us. As I mentioned to you, yes, perhaps in China we can buy assets on the low, and we will look at that. But you know, buying on the low does not make sense if you're going to lose money at variable cost, which is what is happening today. So we are a little bit careful on that, but we are indeed looking at different opportunities in different parts of the world, not only in Asia. As you know, those acquisitions are difficult to expect, but we are looking at several opportunities as we speak.
Okay. Well, thank you for the answers.
Thank you.
We'll go next to Chelsea Consco at TIAA Crest.
Hi, I was hoping that you could just clarify with your $500 million EBITDA guidance, does that include impairment charges, or is that excluding the impairment charges? And going forward, if oil prices remain somewhat stable or increasing throughout the year, have you already completed all of your impairment charges?
Hi, Chelsea. Good morning, and thank you for the question. No, the $500 million guidance for EBITDA for 2015 does not include any any impairment charges. Neither it does include any devaluation, inventory devaluation charges. However, as we have mentioned before, it does include the $75 million extraordinary profit from the sale of the polyurethane business. And for the time being, we do not expect to have any impairment charges for the rest of the year.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll go next to Ermino Pedruno with GBM Global.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I have two questions. The first one is regarding Cosoleacaque. I just want to know the 3 million profit you mentioned corresponds to how many months of operation? And the second one is regarding the multi-month shutdown from one of your clients. I just want to get a sense of how much does that client represent from your polyester volumes, and how many months will the shutdown be in effect? Thank you very much.
Okay, Herminio, first the faster answer would be in terms of the shutdown of one of our customers, it had a negative impact of 25,000 tons for us during the quarter, which is a very major impact. This is a shutdown that happens once every several years. It was related to a problem the customer had, an unusual problem that damaged their equipment. But this should be over by, hopefully, in May. In May, it should normalize. So we're still going to have an impact in April from that, let's say, shutdown. So that's the situation.
The shutdown was considered on your let's say, your volume guidance?
It was.
It was, okay.
We have already taken that into account. Yeah, because it was programmed with a lot of time, so it was considered.
Okay.
Now, the second question regarding the Cosoleacaque. I mean, Cosoleacaque, we were expecting a higher EBITDA than what we had. We were expecting 4.5 as opposed to 3, and the reason for the delay, we had, as you can imagine, some operating problems that we had to fix during the quarter. I think as right now we feel much more comfortable. The plant is operating well. It's close to capacity now. And there was also some delay in terms of the customers. We do have contracts with customers, but the interconnection with the customers took longer than expected. However, on the good news related to that project, you know, in Mexico, it's very important to be qualified as efficient cogeneration, because when you get that, you get some incentives like immediate depreciation, lower wheeling charges, banking, a lot of important advantages when you truly prove that you have an efficient cogeneration plant. The requirements from the government to be considered an efficient cogeneration, they request you to have 20% higher efficiency than the normal combined cycle plants. That's the request, 20% more. I mean, the good news is we had a test last week, and our plant, the efficiency of our plant as opposed to 20% was 87% higher than the combined plant. So we surpassed by far this requirement to be considered an efficient cogeneration. So although we are a little bit down relative to the budget, I think this is very important news. The plant is operating better now, and it will operate even better starting in June, July, with some changes we're making. So right now we feel comfortable with the cogeneration. Not to mention also that, and I think we explained this last quarter, prices of electricity in Mexico, I don't know if you have seen that, have come down significantly from 10, 11 cents per kilowatt hour to 7.5 as a result of the, of course, lower natural gas prices, but particularly lower crude oil prices. And we are doing, you know, relatively well in spite of those changes.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
And moving next to Daniel Rojas at Merrill Lynch.
Good morning, gentlemen. My question is regarding the polypropylene business. I was wondering what percentage of your sales is linked to the automotive sector, and what is your outlook for demand coming from this sector? And I guess I'm trying to understand what economic segments are driving demand for polypropylene in Mexico. Thank you.
Look, Sometimes, I mean, as you've heard also over the years, we say and that most of our volumes in our products are going more to the food and beverage sector than the automobile or industrial sectors. In the case of polypropylene, we do have certainly some exposure to the automobile sector, but I think it will be relatively small, somewhere between 10 and 20%. But the reason for the improvement in volume, let me explain. You know, Mexico imports like 1.2, 1.3 million tons of polypropylene, and we are supplying only like 30% of that market. Okay, so the reason for the improvement in volume is, as I mentioned, that the supply demand in North America is tighter, so we're seeing less imports from the U.S., which we have capitalized by increasing our volumes in Mexico. And again, sometimes we are restricted on the propylene supply, but this quarter we have had both enough supply of propylene and a lot of demand as a result of less aggressive imports into Mexico. So the market in Mexico is huge. If we had more availability of propylene, we could continue to grow, I mean, significantly. And that's why we have shared with you that we're looking into, trying to do something to improve our propylene supply, even considering a project to backward integrate the company, because there is a lot of potential in demand. And as far as we know, we are the lowest cost in North America to produce polypropylene. I mean, at least the lowest conversion cost from propylene to polypropylene. So we have a very competitive situation. We have a very large market in Mexico that we could supply. I mean, we could increase our share. The constraint so far has been lack of propylene, which, as I mentioned, you know, hopefully we will see a little bit some improvement in the months or years to come.
But then is it a fair assessment to say that once you're substituting imports, that with everything that's going on in Mexico, with OEM setting shop and the production capacity in Mexico increasing in the next 4 to 5 years, that you're in a very good position to capture that market share?
Certainly. And again, that is related to this new propylene project that we want to build, because the idea would be to build a new propylene project together with a third line, with another line to increase our capacity. Our capacity today, it would be like 650,000 tons. We are operating, as we speak, around what would be like 520. So we still have 130,000 tons of capacity that we could, I mean, if we have propylene, we could sell. But in the future, what we're considering is a 500,000 ton project of propylene, which will allow us to increase our capacity another 300,000 or 400,000 tons. So we could become a million ton or a million plus ton company. Yes, this business has very attractive prospects to grow in the years to come.
Indeed, thank you very much.
Moving next to Carl Martinez at Interationes.
Yes, hi, good morning. I just wanted to know a little bit more about your 14 million charge devaluation in the polyester division, because here I'm seeing that month to month in the quarter you had a 7% increase in the prices of paraxylene. So I just wanted to come where it came from exactly, that 14 million charge.
Hi, Carl. Could you give us 1 minute, please?
Yes.
Yeah, Carl, the charges we had this quarter were $20 million, $14 yeah. million dollars in polyester and $6 million in plastics and chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In the case of polyester, there was a decrease in paraxylene of about $45 per ton, okay, when you consider the prices at the end of last year versus the prices at the end of the first quarter of this year. So that's where the $14 million comes from. And in the case of the plastics and chemicals $6 million charge, the biggest impact that we had was in the propylene costs. The propylene costs in the market came down from 62 cents per pound at the end of last year to about 49 cents per pound at the end of March. So that impact, if you see it in dollars per ton, is very significant. It's about $285 per ton. That when you consider our inventories of propylene, that comes to the charge of roughly $6 million.
Okay. And do you expect this to continue in the next quarter as well, or do you think it's going to be lower?
No, as of today, the prices of paraxylene in particular are higher than what they were at the end of March, so we still have to wait and see how this evolves. But for the time being, we are not considering any charges for the next few months, unless, of course, these feedstock prices come down significantly again.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
As a final reminder, ladies and gentlemen, star one at this time for any questions. And there are no further questions at this time, and I'd like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Lozano for any additional or concluding remarks. Sir?
Yes, I would just like to thank everyone for participating in today's call. Please feel free to contact us if you have any follow-up questions or comments. Have a good weekend.
And once again, ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's conference. And again, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us.